This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9.
And we're running out of time and we're low on health packs.
Wait, I have an idea.
We did it!
Our game's been saved, but it's dangerous to go alone.
Welcome to Checkpoint, your favourite video game show.
Yes, it is that time again, here, live from Melbourne, Australia, your favourite video game show, Checkpoint, on Joy 94.9. I'm Luke, I'm back. Did you miss me?
We missed you, Luke.
I know you did.
I especially missed you, because that meant I was here by myself, and it was sad and scary.
Even though you hesitated, I believe that you missed me. Elliot is here as well.
I'm here.
And Cam.
Hello.
Dragged you away from Destiny 2 for the show.
My fingers are red from being dragged away from that controller.
Clawing.
Kicking
the whole
and
way.
Screaming.
Claw marks all the way down Bourke Street Mall.
It's quite a visceral scream as well. Okay. Welcome. Great to be here for a very relevant show to your interests.
very relevant.
And to mine and to yours too, Elliot. Yeah, we're absolutely all fans of this genre. Today we're talking about the online shooter. So specifically shooting games, first-person shooters, third-person shooters that are playable online, usually in a large multiplayer sort of space. Mm. So talking about games like Destiny 2, which is essentially a big online shooting MMORPG type game. Also other games that are more competitive, so things like, of course, like Overwatch and stuff like that, which you've all heard to death over the last 18 months.
Yep. That's all we've been talking about, either that or PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
And PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, another big one.
They're the only two games that exist, yeah?
Yeah.
There's nothing else.
There's literally nothing else.
Or Fortnite.
Yeah, and then the special editions of those games forever. Yep. Also today on the show, we've got four big reviews for you. Monster Hunter Stories for the 3DS. Metroid, Samus Returns on the 3DS, which came out today, so that's fresh.
Ooh, topical.
Whoa, topical, fresh, delicious. Knack 2, which came out last week, and also, Cam, your review of Destiny 2.
Did you laugh a little bit after saying Knack 2?
I might have.
Yeah. I think everyone does.
I won't explain why, it's fine. But Destiny 2, which came out last week, but being an online-only game, we all got access at the same time as everybody else, so Cam, you've put only about 200 hours in the last week.
Yeah, like I've lost my job playing it and all of those things, and no one's heard from me, but yeah, I do it for you guys.
You're committed to the cause.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I like you. You're here. We do start the show though with a bit of a segment we call What Are You Playing Right Now. Elliot, what have you been playing?
I've been doing a fun one me and you can talk about a bit, Luke, because ooh, I have been playing Before the Storm Episode 1, Awaken, or whatever it's called.
It's got a really long title.
Life is Strange. Episode 1, Awaken.
Awake.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right, buddy. Yeah, so that's a great... I mean, it's an episodic game. This is the first episode that came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
My full review is online.
Like 2 or 3 hours long? Like,
I'd say 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 is a good... If you want to explore and kind of look at all the extra bits and pieces and kind of take your time, it's about 3, I think.
Yeah, I'm really surprised because this is a new developer taking this on. Don't Nod made the original, and this is made by a company called Deck 9, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And Life is Strange was an incredibly popular game. Not at first. I feel like at first it kind of was underwhelming to people, but it picked up steam as it went on.
It flourishes. And definitely the story expands and rolls through as you go further and further into
it. I'm that terrible person who still hasn't played it at all.
It's definitely worth checking out. And this new game, Before the Storm, is just, it's so similar in so many ways that you wouldn't think it was made by a different developer, because it just sticks to the exact format. And even the writing is that same kind of awesome at some points but kind of cringy at other points, and you laugh out loud because the animation is so terrible at some points.
Yeah, you sort of wonder, like, do teenagers actually speak this way? Because I don't know how a teenage girl speaks, surprisingly. But sometimes they do things, like in the start of the game, she, like, steps over a sign that says, "Don't enter." So she steps over the sign, then, like, turns around and flips off the sign. And you're sort of looking at it going, do teenagers do that? Like, is that actually a thing that happens?
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Well, you know, authority, signs. Yeah, take that.
Take that, signs.
You like that. I don't know. It's a bit weird. So there's moments like that that are really cringy. And then
it's a little bit cringy, but I don't know. I still appreciate it.
Then
it
there's some really gentle, kind, great moments, like when they're, because it's got LGBT characters in the game.
Yes.
And the way it handles those relationships when you're LGBT teenager trying to figure things out and trying to figure out where you fit in the world, things like that, it does really well.
The relationship between the two main characters is really nice, and they had this moment where they're sitting on a train, or a train they'd leapt onto illegally. Yeah. And and I don't know, the story starts unfolding and stuff goes down, but it's still really beautiful and kind of beautifully told at points.
Yeah, I highly recommend it.
I hear that this one pushes the LGBT kind of themes much further
stronger.
As well.
Well, I think
because
Chloe...
it focuses on a character who is part of the community.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas the original game was Max, who is...
She's questioning.
Yeah.
You would say.
But she's not as deeply entrenched. I don't know.
Well, Max was a pretty useless character. Yeah. Like, she didn't really know. The whole time as Max, she didn't really know who she was and what was going on. And then at least Chloe, at least you get
a
sense of, like, you know
Max
who this girl
isn't
is.
Isn't in this as much either, because I got sick of Max eventually.
Max. Yeah, she's annoying. I don't know what to do. Like,
you're really selling the original to me.
No, it's good. It's worth playing. It is worth playing. And you can pick it up for cheapest chips nowadays. Yeah. It goes on sale for like $1 sometimes. Like, it's ridiculous. But Life is Strange, Before the Storm, Episode 1 is really good, and I highly recommend that you play it. Cam, you're obviously Destiny 2.
Yeah, like, I don't know what you want me to say here. Destiny 2, that's all I've been playing.
Sorry.
And It's taking up a lot of my time.
We'll hear more about that later. Yes, I've been playing Rachel from Checkpoint. It was nice enough to gift me for my birthday a copy of Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Aww.
Because she loved it so much that she just had to get it for me as well so I could understand her love. And you know what? It's actually really good.
I will say I did play the opening of that this week as well for like a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's genuinely really fun. The combat's really quite tactical and quite interesting. The characters are really great. Like, it's really fun. It has a Nintendo vibe. It's a bit sort of quirky. I normally hate rabbits because they're kind of like minions to me. Like, they kind of piss me off.
Yeah, but they don't seem 100%. As annoying anymore. Like, I think they've dialed down the annoyingness.
There's moments, don't get me wrong. Okay. There's moments where I'm oh no. But overall, though, I mean, I've only played the first couple of hours, but I really like it. I think Ubisoft have done a fantastic job. It's like a Nintendo game. They've done a really great effort with it.
Yeah, it definitely plays really well. And artistically, it's really poppy and colourful and fun. And, you know, Peach Rabbit is bae.
She's actually great, yeah. There's one part where she gets, like, attacked by this boss character. It's, like, holding her upside down, and she's like, ooh, selfie, and just takes a selfie anyway. It's like, that is me.
I love her shade at Peach. When you finally meet Peach, she is not impressed.
Yeah, exactly. Even when her hair catches fire sometimes, and she actually does a hair flick to put it out. Like, it's, yeah. So, done a really great job with her. Like, seriously.
I love her so much.
It's a good, she's actually great. I at first was skeptical, but no, she's actually great. That's what I've been playing. But look, lots of reviews to get through today. The first one, comes all the way from Brisbane. Nat's prepared this for us. It's his review of Knack 2. Knack 2 is not the worst game I've ever played, but it certainly lacks a special sauce that would make me ever consider going back. Cam's laughing at me. Carefully crafted by Sony's Japan studio, Knack 2 is a pretty mechanically sound, but ultimately flat and repetitive title that did not resonate with me. Unfortunately, Knack 2 exists in a world where it just isn't needed, and it struggles to find its feet and prove otherwise in its long-winded 15-chapter campaign. Here's the thing about Knack. It tries too many things and falls short on all of them. What I mean by that is Knack 2 has tried to expand its appeal by bringing in elements from other mascot platformers and action games, and unfortunately the end result feels like a bad doppelganger. It blends 2D and 3D platforming a la Crash Bandicoot. It has upgrade cards a la Ratchet and Clank. It features a skill tree system a la Styx Master of Shadows. And the combat system, updated and expanded from the original Knack, feels lifted straight out of Jak and Daxter. However, where each of the original games succeeds and enriches the experience with these factors, Knack 2 unfortunately feels like a hot mess, like Christmas leftovers baked into a pie. A few redeeming elements of gameplay is a shifting between regular old Big Knack and Small Knack, or as I like to call him, Snack, to solve puzzles, and the implementation of drop-in, drop-out cooperative play. I like a game that makes you think, and while the puzzles are incredibly simple, I enjoyed the mild challenge they posed. Add in a second Knack, and the ways to solve puzzles opens up and allows the players a bit more creativity, which I think is a step in the right direction. Knack 2's combat is better than what came before, and drip feeds you additional moves and super moves throughout the game in an effort to keep things fresh. It's one of the game's strongest features, the fluid and mostly engaging combat, and there is something very satisfying about utilising your range of moves to defeat a large crowd of enemies. Some environmental hazards can aid or ail you in battle, with yellow crystals disorienting enemies while red crystals explode and stun Knack, making things a lot more interesting and requiring care on the battlefield. All good platformers have strong visuals and vibrant colour palettes, and Knack 2, while not necessarily a good platformer, delivers in spades on this front. The varied locales on Knack 2 provide an opportunity for some great artistic detail, and the character models of Knack, his human counterparts, and the villainous robots and goblins are all vibrant and sharp. Some of the larger set pieces actually venture into impressive territory, especially the old temples and swamplands of the middle chapters. Ultimately, it pains me to see Sony try so hard to foster another mascot for the PlayStation audience and miss the mark by such a wide margin. Knack 2 exists in a world where we simply do not need it, and I think we knew that with the original Knack. Will we see a Knack 3? Who knows? But I'm not sure Knack has it in him for another bout of disappointment. Knack 2 is available now on PlayStation 4, so make sure you check it out here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. Here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. Before we get stuck into the news, got one more review for you for now. It is Olivia's review of Metroid Samus Returns, read by Elliot.
Hello.
It's been 7 years since the last Metroid game, not including the spin-off Metroid Prime Federation Force, but we finally have an all-new Metroid to play. Metroid Samus Returns is the first proper 2D Metroid game in 13 years, going all the way back to Zero Mission. But more importantly, this is a remake of Metroid 2, a 20-year-old game. As a remake, Metroid Samus Returns attempts to bring the brilliance of the original games to current-day standards, creating what feels like an almost entirely new experience and what amounts to a real comeback for the series. The story is pushed forward without a lot of narrative, relying on the silence of Samus in cutscenes and the actions she carries out. The cutscenes are an added touch that weren't present in the original game, and this is really the only change made to the game's story. The team knew when to pull back on exposition here, something they struggled with in Metroid Other M. In classic Metroid fashion, the main gameplay consists of exploration, gear gathering, and laser blasting enemies. There is a larger map for Samus to explore, although much of the objectives and actions remain the same. Enter a new area and find the markers. The combat is fantastic and simple. It has been engineered to overcome the previous struggles of 2D Metroid games, which faced control limitations, especially Metroid 2. Being able to fire in more than 8 directions has improved the fights dramatically. Thanks to the analog stick, players are able to aim in a complete 360-degree range, and it makes the combat so much more satisfying, controllable, and natural. Another new aspect to the combat is the counter-attack. By pressing X just before colliding with an enemy, Samus is able to counter their attack, stunning the enemy and auto-locking onto them for a short period. Countering during a boss fight will often lead to a cutscene of Samus flying through the air and unleashing rockets into the Metroid. It is pretty awesome and a great touch that advances the series. The graphics are in full 3D, which is strange for the side-scrolling platformer. Nothing here looks out of place though, with a huge amount of level of detail present within the game. Environments look amazing and the fluid motion of Samus jumping in front of these environments is great. The Metroid homeworld is full of various landscapes and biomes, with leafy worlds and lava pools. The areas all feel distinct and look gorgeous. Metroid Samus Returns is more than just a remake. It stands above and beyond on its own. The game surpasses what that of a normal upgrade would typically entail and takes the extra step to fix the issues and sidestep the mistakes of previous games. This game is a reimagining that brings forth everything the fans have been hoping for and reignites the hope for incredible new entries into the Metroid franchise.
Thank you very much, Elliot. Thank you, Olivia, for that review. Metroid Samus Returns on 3DS came out today, along with a couple of brand spanking new amiibos, which Cam already owns.
Oh, yeah. I love amiibos.
Straight into it.
Yeah, all over amiibos.
That's the review. More reviews later in the show coming up. Before we do that, though, it is time for the news.
With the games industry changing so often, it can be hard to keep up.
So it's time to get updated with your weekly news checkpoint.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of news this week.
Just a little bit of a whole lot of news.
A pinch. Bit of a smidge.
Yeah.
Salt Bay pinch.
Yeah, Salt Bay pinch of news.
I'm still over that meme. It's like so old now. Salt Bay, everyone.
It'll never die.
So Nintendo held one of their direct presentations. So it's like their little mini press conferences they do every couple of months to show off what's happening.
Just an online stream of cool Nintendo stuff coming up.
I actually love them. I think it's a really smart way. Like, I actually wish that more companies would do that, kind of rather than just kind of things leaking out here and there. But every like couple of months just go, bang, here's all the cool stuff we're doing.
Yeah, it's like giving you a hamper instead of like giving you little bits and pieces the whole time. It goes, build up, here's a whole bunch of news, at least one thing in this you'll like.
I think they should call it Nintendo Hamper now. I think
Nintendo
that's really good.
Yeah, I'm all over it, guys. Marketing. Call me.
PR. So cool announcements. We'll go through. There's a bunch, so we won't go spend a lot of time on all of them. Firstly, they're doing a bundle for Mario Odyssey and the Switch, which I think is really clever because people are going to want to get a Switch for that game.
Yep.
Cam not.
Well, apparently. I just feel like so many people who are huge Mario fans already have a Switch.
Do you reckon?
I feel so.
Straight into it.
Maybe people have been holding off deliberately, but I feel Zelda was enough to get people to buy the Switch at the very beginning, and now they're waiting for something, which is Mario.
To say there won't be a certain subset of people, though, waiting. And I think for them, they'd probably appreciate this. But, you know.
You're keen on the new Mario, right?
Not so much. Not enough to buy a Switch.
Oh,
I haven't owned a console in, like, 10 years.
So you're a bit of an exception. Yeah. You're a weird one.
Does it come with special Joy-Cons?
Yeah.
The red ones, yeah?
Yes. And a special Mario case as well.
Of course.
It's the whole thing. I'll buy another one. Also, a new Kirby has been announced on the Switch and on the 3DS. So double the Kirby action. If you like your pink blobs.
Yeah. Who doesn't like Kirby?
I love Kirby, but I feel like there's a weird like middle point of everyone loving him and And I don't know. I feel like
you've
we could
gone
do
full
with
on
more.
Hipster with Kirby, haven't you? Now
no,
that
not
people
really.
Like him.
No. Oh, no. I want more people to like him. Oh, okay. I want more games and some different ideas instead of just side scrollers, maybe.
Do you think? Well, one of them is like a, it's like a battle. It's like a Super Smash Brothers, but with Kirby.
All over
basically.
That. Yeah.
Just a whole bunch
that.
Of Kirby's.
It's like Kirby versus Kirby. I should have called it Kirby versus
Well,
Kirby.
Where's the Kirby FPS, let's be honest?
What would you throw? Or would you
just
like,
suck stuff in and throw it out?
Holy crap. Yeah. That would be an interesting experience. Sucking things in the first person. Let's be our game.
Here we go.
Hey.
New RPG from Square coming out. Project Octopath Traveler is the current working title. It's a working title. Yeah. Hopefully. A demo dropped on the Switch store yesterday as well. So they had the announcement and said, there's a demo out now. Give it a go and please fill out a survey online so you can give us feedback on the game.
Good. That's how development should happen.
It's really great. And I mean, it's a Square RPG, so it's like old school looking, really cool art style, turn-based as well.
The art style is awesome. I think that's what's going to drag me into it because I am a bit love-hate with RPGs, as we've learned.
Yes.
But this one has a really cool art style.
If it hits all those retro beats where it feels like you're playing a modernized Super Nintendo game, I'm kind of all about that.
Yeah.
I love that. I haven't downloaded it myself yet, but I'm going to do it tonight, actually. I'm going to get stuck in. So that's really exciting news. Again, good to see more new, interesting IP coming to Nintendo Switch. Other platforms won't have it, which is awesome. Bethesda also supporting the Switch, which is great. Bringing out, Doom, which is a bit, it's an 18-month-old game.
A good game, though.
A good game and a violent game for Nintendo.
For Nintendo.
Really violent, so it's great. And Wolfenstein 2 as well, which comes out next month. It won't be coming out on Switch next month. It'll be early 2018 for that one, for the Switch version. But again, another violent game with very mature themes and mature content. And Bethesda, coming to the party with the Switch, really supporting it full on.
I think it's great that Nintendo are embracing more mature games and also embracing third party, because that's something we haven't seen that much of in the past. But it's always good for the consumer. Like, it's not just children playing your console, Nintendo. Sometimes adults want to play too, and we want Doom and Wolfenstein.
I think Switch as a whole, with its marketing when it was first coming out, has realised the audience that Nintendo has these days. The marketing for Switch was not towards families at all anymore. It was towards, young, early 20s to late 20s who are at a rooftop party playing their Switch. At a rooftop party specifically. So I think that bringing in these kind of edgier games for them, because previously you had things like Mad World, but that was about it.
Yeah.
And even then that was really died down.
Yeah, it was. And I think it's not just so much Nintendo allowing mature content, but there's the other side of, is a big third-party publisher like Bethesda actually supporting Nintendo and going all in on the console? Because there's been times in the past where the console wasn't selling very well, like the Wii U, for example. And so it was a cost that basically third-party publishers and developers didn't feel the need to invest in. They were like, people aren't going to buy my game on that console, really, so why would I bother putting it on there? So it kind of goes both ways, and this is really exciting, along with the fact that Skyrim Switch, people are going to love this. It's like the 20th Skyrim release.
I was gonna say, the reason that Bethesda is supporting them is because Nintendo hasn't told them yet. Can we have something other than Skyrim this year?
Everyone loves Skyrim, though. I've got people who still, like, I had a friend who told me last week, he's like, I finally platinum Skyrim Special Edition on PS4. It's my 7th Skyrim finish. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he wants to buy it on
Switch.
Did you
tell him other games are available?
He's going to buy it on Switch. These people exist.
Well, you need that Zelda costume. Come on.
I'm pretty keen on that.
That looks so weird with that face that they've put on him. And he looks like he's going to come into, he's going to haunt your nightmares.
Bethesda face with
Zelda. I'm surprised Evil Within isn't coming to the Switch and they're doing Doom instead. I'd rather see Evil Within.
Oh, that'd be so weird. But I couldn't play that on the train. You'd be jumping out of the carriage.
Like, I don't know how you play Doom, like, portable. That game is so fast-paced. Like, how do you even do that with that little controller?
People are going to be throwing up on the train non-stop playing
more
that
than normal, because it happens already, just for other reasons. Public transport. Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is coming out this year. I actually thought it would drop into next year. I even said that on the show a couple weeks ago. I was like, oh, no release date yet. It's not looking good.
They
December
heard you,
1st.
And they said, just because Luke said that.
Just because Luke.
We'll release it unfinished.
Because I'm an influencer, Cam. That's why.
Of course you are.
Oh, don't use that word.
Hey, mate, trust me. Xenoblade Chronicles 2, I mean, I love the first Xenoblade Chronicles on the Wii U. I thought it was fantastic. I'm all in on a second one. It's the first time they're going to have an open world this size that's bigger than Breath of the Wild in terms of Switch games. So other games haven't really tried to do anything like that yet, but Xenoblade Chronicles 2 really looks like it's going to be a massive adventure. Why are you screwing your face up, mate?
I liked Xenoblade Chronicles 1. Xenoblade Chronicles X was a bit... But when I saw the trailer for Xenoblade... Oh, my God. Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
It's a struggle.
It doesn't look like the same game anymore. The art, like, so yeah. much of it looks different, and it looks really bland in comparison to what it used to be.
Just in terms of art style. Yeah, it's more like anime, yep. but like weak anime.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm worried about that too, but I love the gameplay so much. So I'm really hoping it just pulls through with that. I hope it's still a good game. We'll find out in a couple of months anyway. Also, Mario Top 100, Mario Party Top 100 on the 3DS.
Yeah.
Why is that on the Switch, though?
I want to know if people actually voted for this or if like Nintendo just decided what their top 100 mini games were for Mario Party and chucked them all into one bundle. Like, how did this come about?
Like, the internal vote?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like a tribal council.
When I saw the news headline that, like, it's the top 100 minigames from Mario Party, I'm like, cool. Like, I didn't hear. Like, where did... How did they get this vetting process?
There's been more than 100. There's been, like, 10 Mario Parties. And each one has, like, 50 games.
There's been 101 games, and they've cut one from the top 100.
But every year, most of the games are kind of the same. They're like, wearing different outfits, but they're still, like, knocking someone off a ledge or, like, balancing on a thing.
Dodging things being thrown at you. Yeah. We've got to have 50 of those.
That's the first 1 to 50 is dodging things.
First, you got to dodge someone throwing a bottle, then you've got to dodge someone throwing a tomato.
A bottle.
Yeah.
It's like Collingwood on a Saturday night. It's fine. I play that every week. It's fine. Okami HD. Off the Nintendo news now. Off Nintendo news. Done. Direct. Done. Okami HD is coming out later this year on PS4, Xbox One, and Steam on December 12th. For those of you who haven't played Okami yet, there's not many because it's been re-released so many times. Why are you rolling your eyes?
Because I haven't played it.
Haven't you?
What?
What do you mean?
Well, it's has it ever been on PC before, Luke?
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually,
yeah.
No, I don't think it has.
Yeah.
Well, now's your chance.
That's like my excuse for everything.
Now the PC Master Race can join us slebs.
Yeah, I can't wait to play Okami
HD. Are you excited
HD?
To play it?
The game, like, I've known about Okami, and it looks freaking gorgeous. Like,
oh, it's beautiful.
That art style is just, it's its own thing. Like, it's not even close to anything else. It's that beautiful.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I want to jump into it just for that, to be honest. But I've heard other good things about it.
It's a stunning game. It's probably the best Zelda game that isn't a Zelda game, really.
There you go.
Yeah, like, it's so good.
That's fair.
Yeah, such a good action RPG platform. Ah, just give it to me. So that's very exciting. And one more news article, a bit of a weird one. Cam, probably a bit more aware of this than me. Bungie got into a bit of trouble. There's a piece of armor in Destiny 2 that features what looks like a well-known white supremacist symbol.
Yep.
And someone's pointed this out to them. Now, I don't really know the backstory of this.
So it was a hunter arm. It's kind of close to it. Where it comes from is actually a Blizzard reference because it's a World of Warcraft reference, Keck.
Yeah.
But that was collected, that's been utilized by a white supremacy group without Bungie really realizing.
Right.
So they named one of their armor.
How can you not realize?
Well, I wouldn't know that. I mean,
I didn't know until this article came out. Like, I didn't know until the news dropped that Keck was a thing. And then I suddenly am seeing it everywhere. Essentially, it's close but not identical, but it's close enough that people noticed.
Yeah.
And so Bungie did the right thing and they pulled it. They, you know.
Yeah, they acted quick.
Yeah, they acted quick. They pulled it straight away. They're going to redesign it and re-release it again.
Yeah, and they've apologized and they said it wasn't intentional and they had a vetting process that they missed this one. And I mean, a game as large as Destiny 2 with so many small details crammed into every single thing in that game, some stuff's going to slip through. I mean, how much can you vet before you kind of put it through and go, you know what, it's finalized?
Yeah, it's one gauntlet out of hundreds of gauntlets in that game. And so obviously someone's just been like, quick, we got to get another one out. Let's push it through.
Yep.
And it slipped through the cracks. I don't think anyone deliberately put this hate symbol in the game.
No.
Agreed. And I think it's really good that they've taken it out. A lot of people are claiming the whole, oh, censorship, we're censoring art. And it's like, no, they've claimed, we didn't mean to, it's not an accident, you're not holding them down by getting rid of it.
Exactly. So they've removed it, which is really good news. So hopefully no more about that. Later in the show, that's the news. We're going into online shooters and all their different forms. Two more reviews coming at you as well. Destiny 2 and Monster Hunter Stories. It's all happening here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Hey! Listen!
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Yes, here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. Another review coming at you. This one, Monster Hunter Stories on the 3DS, prepared by Olivia. Monster Hunter Stories is an adorable installation to the popular Monster Hunter series, mixing up the normal formula to create a cute role-playing game centered around hatching monsters to fight alongside. Players are no longer hunters, but riders, who befriend and hatch monsters to fight those which have become corrupted. These corrupted monsters have been overrun by a magical plague, leading the main player to seek out the cause of these mysterious happenings. The vibrant colour palette and cell shading works extremely well for this fantasy setting and does not push the hardware of the 3DS to its limits like the normal Monster Hunter games would. The aesthetic is almost akin to Wind Waker, with a relaxing atmosphere to boot. Monster Hunter Stories is a refreshing change of pace for the series, including a change to a turn-based fighting system. It's a far easier game than any others within the series, with past titles often requiring multiplayer for fights. Here, the monsters, or monsties, take the role of other players to assist in the fights, which overall creates a fairer system for those going at it solo. The battles are a drastic difference to the main series, which makes the game more accessible. Instead of the infuriatingly difficult Dark Souls-style controls, the fights have been switched to a turn-based attack system. A three-way weakness system has been added, with speed, power, and technical attacks being the trifecta. These three attack types will cancel out each other's strengths, and in order to succeed, you'll have to learn each other's monsters' tendencies and behaviours. With every successful attack, a battle meter will fill. Once full, you'll be able to ride atop your main monster and combine strengths. A special move for each type of monster will also be available in this mode, which encourages you to raise and train a multitude of monsters. Finding and raising monsters is done very well here, with a system of randomly generated dungeons per map that holds a monster nest filled with eggs to choose from. These monster dens may include some super rare eggs and monsters, or just the monsters from the biome that area. Either way, you won't know until you hatch it. I could get lost just finding eggs for hours in this game and hatching new friends. Monster Hunter Stories is a fantastic game and well worth playing. Fans of the series will enjoy the game for the world building it brings to the Monster Hunter universe, while newcomers will be enamored by the colorful characters and expansive world that really sucks you into the game. And Monster Hunter Stories came out on 3DS last week, so actually I'm a Monster Hunter fan. Sounds pretty cool. I might jump on it.
Yeah. Why not?
I'll jump on a monster.
I've never played Monster Hunter either.
I've never played Monster Hunter either.
Oh, really? Actually. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, you have no idea then.
I don't.
Either way, it's available now if you're interested. Now, getting stuck into our topic this week, guys. And it's a bit of a meaty topic, or it can be. I just wanted to say meaty.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, weird choice of word.
On international radio. So, online shooters. Now, part of the reason for this topic is, of course, Destiny 2 came out last week, and it's taken the world by storm. Already has 1.7 million players or something have been playing in the last week at least. Or
yeah, sure.
Like
they're
that.
Always trying to get on at the same time as me.
Yes. Cues.
Contacting Destiny servers.
Oh, God. Actually, I've been waiting in the loading screens for the that main hub a lot.
The tower. That's the one that does it to me.
Yeah.
Where you're sitting there and you can hear it and you know, about like 26 people are going to drop at the same time.
Yeah.
And then it loads and everyone gets put in.
Super frustrating. But I mean, online shooters, arguably the most marketable and, well, the most marketed genre of video game nowadays, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it went insane. I mean, probably because of Call of Duty almost, that there was this boom in the industry.
Yeah.
And you were either like a Call of Duty game or you were like some kind of RPG, and that's like all people made.
That's all there is.
Yeah, that's fair. Or like a action platform
action
kind
adventure
of thing.
Yeah.
The genre action adventure.
The genre that's not really a genre, but we throw it in there anyway.
Yes. Because you can call Destiny 2 an action adventure in a way, I suppose.
You can call Destiny 2 everything though, couldn't you? You could call it an MMO, yeah, or first person shooter, an RPG.
In my written review, I think it starts at the beginning, I mentioned that's an MMOFPS RPG.
Yeah, something.
Just get all the acronyms in there.
Yeah. OMG. It's, you know, I think that shooters nowadays especially are trying to be lots of different things. They're trying to incorporate lots of different systems and lots of different types of things as well to try and, I guess, capitalize on that really warm, fuzzy feeling you get when you level up and you ding, or when you get loot as well.
Yeah, RPG's elements have come into shooters in a big way, especially in the online space where you want to feel like you're achieving something rather than just shooting all day long.
Yeah, well, there's always been those advancement systems, right? Like, even before those kind of looting RPG mechanics came in, you had, like, what was it called when you advance a level in something like Call of Duty? There was a specific name for it, which meant you started from square one again.
Oh,
but people just wanted to do it to get...
You re-up.
Sure.
That's one of them.
Okay.
In some games, you hit a level 100 and then you can choose to re-up and start again. And
yeah.
You start leveling from one again and you get like a little star next to your profile icon to show that you've re-upped a couple
of
times.
And then you re-up again and you'll be like another symbol with like two stars.
Like a promotion kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, there's these kind of RPG like advancement systems hit shooters like real big because you can't just be like a normal shooter anymore. It doesn't feel like it. You have to either be a hero shooter or something with loot.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you guys did a podcast for Intimates, which you can listen to on our podcasts, Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, on iTunes and all our podcasting services. But you talked about the hero shooter and how Overwatch in particular brought in this new kind of idea that, well, they were around before that, but Overwatch kind of made it really popular and really fresh and really fun, having this idea of different characters running around doing objectives and they all have their own different powers and unique styles, and you have to think about more than just the shooting aspect.
Yeah.
Because Call of Duty often has this accessibility barrier where you don't want to play it because you know that everyone else that's played it before you is far better than you are and you'll never get a win.
Oh, yeah, the amount of times that I would be like, oh, I've got the Call of Duty, I've finished the single player, which no one ever does, and I'm like, oh, I'll try the multiplayer, and immediately I was like, I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, you headshotted like 10 times in the first 10 seconds,
yeah.
And you're like, well, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, it's one of those games you have to be there from the ground and play over and over and every day because there are so many dedicated fans to that kind of series, and I did it myself, not with Call of Duty, but with Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
And it was torture. Oh. If you were new and you were in a game with me, like, you had no chance. Not because I'm tooting my own horn, but because I played over 1,000 hours of that game every day over and over again, and at that point you just reach a level that new players can't experience.
I don't know, you're tooting your horn a little bit.
Yeah, the tickets is just falling off.
Yeah, right. But I think a lot of those games release these areas where you can have a secondary focus for your character beyond shooting so that they could reach a wider audience, because things like Counter-Strike, I will never get into that. Yeah. There is a barrier.
No, you don't. Yeah, you don't want to get into
that. It's so daunting, the idea of it even. Even hearing Counter-Strike, just the words makes me go, oh, no.
Like a shiver runs down
your
spine.
I've never played it, but it makes me sick. Like, I just don't want to deal with it.
I did a LAN event in high school and, oh, it got really heated between people there.
I'd recommend Counter-Strike over something like Dota 2 for a new player, but it's still up there as far as like...
I recommend neither.
Yeah, just do neither. But at least a MOBA, at least you can kind of take your time to figure out what's going on.
No,
because
then you're just
like
dying.
Headshot, headshot, headshot.
Yeah,
please.
Well, that's true.
At least Dota has that little moment where you're all starting the same kind of level.
But Counter-Strike, at least like people who have played first-person shooters before can jump in and have some kind of level of decency, whereas a MOBA is really hard for people to get their head around.
Elliot, I hate them both. Let's move on.
Okay.
Another one, though. I mean, Cam, you reviewed Lawbreakers about a month ago. Another attempt to capitalize on this team-based, team shooter, hero shooter online trend.
Has not gone well.
Has not gone well. No. There was news that they're struggling with players.
And I could have seen that from the second I reviewed it. The second I was on playing it, from the beta when it launched and everyone was talking about it to when it actually released, the player count was so low and I used to wait so long to get into a game the first day it released.
Imagine matchmaking today. Like, when was the last time you tried to play Lawbreakers?
When I reviewed it a month ago.
Yeah, because I hear stories from people now who are like, well, I could be sitting in queue for like upwards of an hour.
Yeah.
What's the point? Because if you can't get into a game, like, it's not a game anymore. That game needs players to be a game.
It's that thing, though, that they did that silly mistake where they were, we're going to go free-to-play at the start of the year, and then a month later we're like, actually, no, we're going to do what Overwatch did and charge you a retail price and then have free loot box, like, leveling up loot box system inside, but you can still purchase them. But the problem was that the game lacked a big bit of polish that it's, you can't just go, we're going to do what Blizzard did and will be as successful, because it's Blizzard. They've been doing this for a lot longer than
you. And
if
you look at other companies that have tried and matched Blizzard in the past, just look at every single MMORPG ever since Warcraft came out and how they've all gone free-to-play and they failed over the years.
Yeah.
Blizzard is still charging for that game after, well, how long? Like 16, 17 years or something? Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's only a small pocket of games that in the MMO field that are still able to charge a subscription field. I think Final Fantasy Realm Reborn, which went in a very different direction.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much else outside of that.
We've got more online shooters to talk about, including a new sort of trend that's happening thanks to PUBG, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, the Battle Royale shooter, which is really exciting too. But also Cam's review of Destiny 2 is up next here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Hey, listen.
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Heaps of great content, including this next man you're going to hear his voice, done a massive online in-depth analysis of Destiny 2. So much content online.
So much.
So this is the radio edit of Cam's review of Destiny 2.
The first edition of Destiny is now 3 years old, and to say it is divisive among gamers is a little bit of an understatement. The first major project from Bungie since they stepped away from their smash hits, Halo series. The first in the series was a mix of solid gunplay, an interesting concept, but some frustrating replayability mechanics and storytelling. Over the three-year cycle, it released multiple DLC updates, each one showing that Bungie was open to negative feedback and were trying to make amends for the shortcomings of its initial release. For some, it was too late, and their guardians won't be rejoining us in the tower. For others, Destiny became a community that galvanized against the on-trend haters the game received. My partner and I, as well as a close circle of friends, were loyal. We loved the game. We loved playing as a team. I was fairly critical of the game during my time with it, but I could never deny the joy it gave me playing as a robotic space wizard who had harnessed the power of the sun. With all this in mind, Destiny 2 had very big shoes to fill. Not only did it have to reprove itself in the eyes of those who had been spurned by its vanilla release, they also had to wow and impress people who had been devoted for 3 years now. That's no small task, and it has been a point of conversation for quite a lot of gamers over the last few months. Can Bungie deliver? After the events of Destiny 1, though, we are dropped right into the thick of it as the story starts barreling ahead from the word go. Gaul, a warlord of the Cabal race who posed a minor threat in the original game, has rallied the feared Red Legion and launched a full assault on the last city and the guardians in the towers that protect it. Visually, the game looks stunning. Now that the series has decided not to cater for the PS3 and Xbox 360, they're able to put current-gen hardware through its paces and with lush environments and beautiful particle effects on your powers. Magical explosions drip with character, and the visual flair around a rare item dropping triggers just the right gland in my brain to make my heart beat a little bit faster. Play areas are large, and social spaces are populated and lively. The audio continues to have epic ballads that really set the stage for larger-than-life battles. I would say that once or twice while exploring, I could have dealt with the music just calming down for a moment. More of a relaxing walk in the forest feel and less jaw-dropping knife fight with a god vibe. Outside of that, though, the music ebbs and flows and sets the scene for each mission that it takes part in. But how does it play? Oh boy, does it play well. Bungie know how to make a shooter, and they've expanded on the solid mechanics they already had. Movement around the space is fluid, guns have the right recoil weight and feel, and powers are weighty. There's been a lot of dissent from players about the slowing down of the power recharge, but I'm that one guy that likes it. Grenades in melee need to be used in the right conditions. You don't necessarily want to save them, but you can't just clear an entire room hurling grenades everywhere. It is forcing players to be a lot more tactical in their approach. Gone is the reliance on going to orbit. Your map can take you from one sandbox play zone to another with ease, and all missions are commenced from inside the patrol area. Social zones still exist for your vendors and community bits and pieces, as well as the Strike and Crucible playlist. Adventures are the new side quest and are scattered through the world. I still haven't gone through all of them because there are so many. Lost sectors have been added, and there are little hidden encounters that you can run around quick rewards as many times as you like, as long as you can find them. There is so much to do in this game right now. Bungie have clearly been listening to what we are looking for in the series. However, as some of my friends who are new to the series have said to me, perhaps a little too much. There is a lot to learn, and I've been running a few quick personalized tutorials with some first-time guardians to help them get their heads around how everything comes together. This game has floored me. In the very opening, it welcomed back older players with memories of their achievements and who they achieved it with in Destiny 1. 3 years of the original game came flooding over me and made me very emotional. I have made friends because of this game, and I have spent 3 years enjoying the company of my best friend and partner, Rowan, while playing it. We were squished by dark ascendant demigods, kicked backwards through time by sentient machines, blown to smithereens by usurper rulers. The list goes on, and I would do it all again. Instead, I get to do a whole bunch of new things for the first time, and I am so glad.
Thank you very much, Cam. Destiny 2, it came out about a week and a bit ago, but I mean, it's still just getting new players every day. A perfect example of an online shooter done well. And I know, you know what? I've given the first Destiny a lot of crap over the last 3 years
I did
on
too.
This show. I've been like, ah, no, I'm not getting Destiny 2. I'm not going to do it. It's actually fixed a lot, if not all of my complaints about the first one.
It's gotten rid of a lot of the busy work that you had to do in the first one. Everything's been streamlined that was an annoyance in the first one, and it feels that way. It's so good.
It's such an improvement. You know what? I literally, like most nights, Destiny 2 would come up online with my gaming mates, and one mate in particular, Dan, would be like, oh, Destiny 2, you guys. And I'd be like, shut up, Dan. I'd just get really angry about it. I have to apologize on air live. Dan, I'm sorry. Destiny 2 is good. You know, great. We talked about online shooters before, really merging different types of modes to make them stand out and be different. Another game mode has come out of the woodwork, though, over the last sort of several months. Elliot, this is one that you play a lot of, the resurgence or the insurgence of this new genre.
It's the Battle Royale genre, which I guess kind of started with H1Z1, but that hit its popularity, but it didn't peak it to what it is now because PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds came along and it just became this massive thing. And all of a sudden, all these studios are looking at the Battle Royale genre and saying, well, we can do that. We can tap into that market.
I am genuinely surprised that it took to 2017 for this genre to really exist.
Are we finally at a place where the internet can handle it? I mean, it's a 1 versus 100. So you've got 100 players in this battle zone. And you fly above this island and you drop out when you want to drop out of this. Is it a helicopter or a plane in Unknown's Battlegrounds?
It's a big cargo
I haven't played
plane.
It yet. Okay. Drop out of this plane and land on this island and it's like, cool, gather your resources, find weapons, be the last man standing. Good luck. Mm. And you go. And, I mean, I'm excited to play this on Xbox when it eventually launches on console later this year because I have a good enough PC. Or I'm not confident enough with PC shooters to actually play it. I think I'd struggle, to be honest, because I'm a controller boy. And those menus on the PC version look a bit crazy.
The game is not perfect.
Well, it's still early access.
It's still early access, and it's made by, like, a small development team. But, the inventory system is a bit overwhelming and cumbersome. I don't see that being fixed by an Xbox version. I'm sorry.
They're changing the UI, we'll though, see. To make it more accessible for controllers.
Fair enough,
They are changing, and I've seen that. But interestingly enough, popular game, popular idea. I love the idea. It kind of triggers all those old Battle Royale, Korean movies from like the early noughties where there's like the kids put on the island to kill each other and last man standing survives and stuff. I love all that. Kind of Hunger Games-y as well. You know, it kind of has all those cool ideas where it's like, can I really last till the end? Can I win versus 100 people and be the last man standing?
I just am so excited by the scope and size of it.
Yeah. And Elliot, you've actually won a couple, haven't you?
Oh, I've won a considerable amount.
Now that you've played it a lot.
I play it, like, constantly now. Like, it is my new thing. Like, I jump into PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds constantly, and now I've been jumping into Fortnite Battle Royale, which is the new mode that's just come out for Fortnite, which is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but with a Fortnite skin. Like,
Fortnite
identical.
It's not a PvP game. Fortnite is a let's build forts together and survive the onslaught of zombies, basically. And now they're just like, we've added a game mode. It's got patched in randomly. I was like, what is this 4 gig download on my console tonight? That's really weird. Oh, yeah, it's a new game mode, Battle Royale. It's playable now. It's 1 versus 100. You parachute in off of a bus, a flying bus.
Oh, thematically, it's great because you're not even parachuting, like, sometimes you'll have a different thing. You'll have like an umbrella that you'll sail down on, like Mary Poppins style.
I'm pretty sure I saw someone using the the sail that is from Legend of Zelda, it's almost identical to it. They use that to come down in.
Well, that's great. And I mean, I had a couple of matches of it, and the first one I did, there was only 40, because I think it was pretty early in the download. Mm. So 40 of us in the match, and I came fourth. And even in that, I was like, it was such an adrenaline rush just being on this island, not knowing where my enemies were. What do I do? Do I find supplies? I don't want to do that thing in Fortnite where you hit something too much to break it down, because then it shakes on the screen. So you don't want people to see the things shaking in the distance to see where you are. So I was like trying to just like get little shrubs and things they weren't going to see. It's a really cool genre, and I know they've copied it essentially exactly from PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but I mean, they're filling a need, and people obviously want this kind of thing in their games.
Oh yeah, and it's not hard. Like, I was playing it this morning, and it's not hard to get into a match with 100 people. Not as easy as PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, I've got to say. Also, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds lets you duo or go as a squad and play on Australian servers. Like, they have huge advantages over the Fortnite version. But the Fortnite's this really cool, like, light version of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah, it's a
and
simplified.
It comes with this awesome aesthetic. And that is enough for me to, like, think it's worthwhile.
I think a big part of it is coming at it from that I like Fortnite's aesthetic and I like what Fortnite is doing with its art direction, whereas PUBG is that real kind of DayZ.
Yeah, PUBG is kind of boring in that respect. Yeah, like, it's just pretty realism, but not fantastic realism.
I don't need realism in my video games, no. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting way of taking the online shooter to a different place. I know when Battlefield, I think, was the first one to do 64 players online a while ago.
That game Mag came out and tried to do a 100-man game on console, and it just didn't work. And
there were a couple on PS3 as well.
PlanetSide 2 had those big, sprawling, like, hundreds of people in a big open world that you would go between zones and it'd be like 40v40.
Yeah, but that's cheating. As soon as there's zones, it's cheating because it's loading in different people at different times.
Yeah.
Whereas this 100-man match, like, it has to know where everybody is at any given time and be able to, like, every player has to know where everybody else could possibly be.
I love the footage that has come out of PUBG. I've not played it yet, but I have watched so many good clips.
It's one of the highest streamed games online.
Oh, it is the highest at the moment.
It's hilarious.
I've watched hours of it. Even though I'd never played it, I'm watching this game being like, this is great.
They will never fix those car mechanics because that's getting them so much attention from people who just love watching the car mechanics flip out.
I mean, it's coming on console later this year. We'll see how it translates on the Xbox. It'll be out before the end of the year, we're told. So that'll be a good chance for console players. But if not, Fortnite, give it a crack. So many great online shooters out now. We didn't really talk about Overwatch. We talked about it to death over the last year and a half, but obviously still very popular in that space, still doing really cool new things, new game modes, new ideas, which is fantastic. I think online shooters are always going to be one of the pillars of video game genres. They're always going to be around.
I don't think you can get away from it. Like, the control scheme is too, like, it fits. It fits gaming.
It's a reflex now, isn't it?
Exactly.
But I think it's also something that once you get into it, you know it. Like, originally I avoided it when I was growing up, and then I played one and went, oh, wait, no, this is actually really easy to get into, and now I love them.
Yeah, and you can't get fatigued by the genre because it's not a genre. Shooting isn't a genre. It's a mechanic, and the genres are just, they're so vast and different.
Exactly. There's so much more great shooters to come this year and beyond. So thank you for listening, guys. This has been Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. I've been Luke. Elliot, thank you so much.
No problem.
Cam, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm going to go play Destiny.
That sounds good to me. We're going to play some PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds theme music to cap off the show. And this has been Checkpoint, as always, on Joy 94.9.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast to hear all our past episodes. Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, and we'll catch you at the next checkpoint. We'll be right back.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.